The following is a sponsored program on WBT.
Welcome, everyone, to the Carolina Outdoors. Of course, we talk about outdoors, adventure, things like that each week here on the Carolina Outdoors. But I wonder, have any of you ever been out on one of our area trout streams, maybe a area lake or something, and seen people keeping fish illegally? Now, different streams are posted different ways and restricted in some ways. Many of them have limits. Some, as you've heard us speak about, are catch and release only in regards to trout fishing. Of course, there are slot limits at the coast and all kinds of different pursuits. But still, even though those rules and regulations are there, people still continue to go against the law and keep inappropriate species of fish or maybe inappropriate fish, period. Of course, the same goes for the hunting laws and that sort of thing. But why do they do this? For many, it is to eat food. For many, it's not knowing the law. But for many, there may be commercial reasons. And we're going to talk to Wes Lawson. He is to my right. I'm Bill Barty on the Carolina Outdoors. And Wes is going to talk to us a little bit about international piracy and poaching on this edition of the Carolina Outdoors.
Well, hey there, Bill. Yeah, so we're talking about piracy and poaching, and I don't mean the Pirates of Penzance or the Pirates of the Caribbean, although it could happen there. We're talking about people, organizations, criminal enterprises even, that harvest vast amounts of fish species to then sell on the market. Just think about this. In the last 50 years, the global demand for fish for consumption has more than doubled. In the last 10 years in the U.S., our demand has increased by over 30%. That means the fish has to come from somewhere. What you going to do about it? So there are groups out there that are trying to do this legally. They're working with state and local regulations. They're working with non-governmental organizations. They're working with nonprofit groups. They're playing by the rules. They're fishing appropriately. They're using the correct tackle where appropriate. But then there are others, and this is a really shady part of the global economy and the global society. It's fascinating, it's intriguing, and it's a little scary. So, Bill, we're going to take a trip first to the Antarctic region of the globe. Remember back when you had that little light-up globe in your room as a child? Antarctica, down there on the bottom, the Ross Sea, very cold. There's one species of fish in particular we're going to hone in on, and you know it from a local restaurant probably as Chilean sea bass. It is no bass, and it's not from Chile. But this fish, also known as a toothfish, can get up to over 5 feet long in some cases. Other species are smaller, but it is in high demand, and there are fishing vessels out there in the Ross Sea and the surrounding environs that send out 15, 16, 17 mile long nets and scoop up thousands of tons of these fish. And then they've got to find a market. So they're going to capture these fish, these long nets. Let's talk about these long nets for a minute. In some areas, these nets go all the way down to the bottom of the ocean and they scrape the ocean floor to catch usually one or two species of fish. And there's all kinds of bycatch, which usually doesn't get sent to market. It just gets discarded. And those nets just destroy everything at the bottom of the ocean. It's like a bulldozer. That's destroying the environment and the habitat for all kinds of fish and microorganisms, which really makes it hard for those species to recover. Remember, our demand has increased by 30% in the last 10 years, double in the last 40 or 50. So we want more fish, have less. So you get these fish. Now, they don't go to market live in this case. They're going to get frozen on board the ship. And then in this particular case that we're going to talk about, this one shady character of a ship is going all the way from the bottom of your globe. First stop, Namibia, Africa. Once upon a time, that was German South Africa. That's in the bottom of the map of Africa, just up to the left. That's a long way to go. And what happens? They get there, and then what?
Well, that's what we're going to talk a little bit about. It's amazing because what you just talked about is not a United States issue. It's a worldwide issue, and the anglers involved are crossing borders, the space of different countries, other countries, international waters. All of that is playing a part, and the demand that you're talking about is a worldwide demand. But as that demand has increased, the population of the fish has not been able to increase as well. So, oh, and we should take a moment here on the Carolina Outdoors. He's Wes Lawson. I'm Bill Barty, to talk about technology, because they are using anything from drones to helicopters to airplanes to satellites to spot, track down, and hone in on schools of fish. So, and then, of course, you mentioned the gill nets, and all of this is close to home. North Carolina, of course, has a large commercial fishing industry here. But what we're talking about and the story that we're going to tell is international, and it involves so many different moving parts, from Interpol to different countries, law enforcement enterprises, and that as they chase one. We're just talking about one ship in this story that changes its name multiple times, but many call it the Andre Dolgov. It also went by the STS-50. It was a ship that was hard to catch and breaking all kinds of laws along the way, and we're going to find out about it right now. So you just now took us from Antarctica northwards. What's next?
Yep. So we're tracking this, you know, this, it's basically a tramp ship. It's a tramp steamer. It's a tramp because it doesn't have a real port of a home port. It flies under different flags, different names. It's rusty. It looks kind of gross. It almost looks unseaworthy, but we're going from the Ross Sea way up to Namibia, talking about 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 or 12 day sail, depending on the speed of the vessel. So as we're doing that, this ship is crossing different sovereign, territorial, and economic exclusion zones. Every country that has a coast has economic exclusion zones that go out 200 miles from its coast, which means that only the ships in those waters that have permits and are regulated can fish there. Gets to the port in Namibia, lets the folks there know we have thousands and thousands of this one fish. We have heads and fillets of toothfish, what we know as Chilean sea bass. We want to offload it here. Well, let's take a pause here. And in our minds, oftentimes we think of these developing countries as places where a little bit of cash can grease the wheels and anything unscrupulous can happen. And sometimes that's true. But in the cases of countries and port authorities wanting to take control of their destiny, it's not usually true. And in this case, the port in Namibia knew that this kind of fish was not allowed to come into their harbor. They were working to stop the poaching and piracy of fish, illegal harvesting of fish. And they said, no, you cannot enter, you must leave. And so the ship does. The story could very easily end right there, and it probably has before. People in the port get on the phone, start talking to other regional African non-governmental agencies and coalitions that are working in tandem to make sure that these kind of things don't happen. And that's when our Interpol piece picks up. The Interpol organization, your international police organization, which doesn't necessarily always have arrest powers, but can track down ne'er-do-wells, has an arm that looks at these maritime resource protection issues, and they start drawing on all kinds of technology and other resources and partners up with Sea Shepherd. And they start tracking down this ship, which we're going to, for fun, call the STS-50, names changed 5 or 6 times. That ship tries to make several stops near Madagascar, Mozambique, can't get there, can't even get into one of the harbors because it's too old and it's too leaky. They don't want it in their waters. So now we're on, you know, look at your map. We're on the east side, the right side of the lower part of Africa. We've come a long way. They still haven't been able to offload this fish. things are starting to get a little dicey for them. They've got to figure out what to do. The crew, of course, hasn't gotten paid because the ship hasn't offloaded its goods. They're going to get a little antsy. They want to go home. They can't even get off the boat. What do they do?
Uh-oh. We've got a cliffhanger here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're talking about illegal fishing. Of course, we promote at Jesse Brown's, where Wes and I both hang our hat. We promote legal fishing, especially fly fishing, and we invite you to come in and check us out. But along the way, we like to take note of what's happening in the world. We're talking about commercial fishing on this particular show. We're talking about illegal international commercial fishing here on the program. And one point to make is many of the countries aren't as affluent as others, and therefore they do not worry about enforcement. And there are broadcast numbers that these different vessels will use. And one generic number that is oftentimes used, whether it be by a fishing boat, a recreational craft, cargo ship, or other, is just a series of ones. 1111111111. Why do they do that? Well, it's to put out your identification number. But many people just use it because it's easy. It's not, even when it is against the law to do that, many do it just because it's easy. And that is what that particular ship, the STS-50, has done. So I've probably messed up our cliffhanger at this point, but Wes, will you continue on with what goes on with the crew and the folks involved?
Yeah, so they've got their Maritime Mobile Service Identity Number. Every ship's supposed to have one, just like every aircraft is supposed to have their version of that. It's like a license plate. It keeps the seas safe. So those shipping lanes aren't just a parking lot of ships just bumping into one another. And in this case, these guys who are changing the name of their ship and the flag they fly constantly are falsely sending out this signal so that ports and Interpol and other agencies can't easily track them. They still haven't offloaded their catch. They still haven't refueled. They still haven't paid their crew. They are in dire straits. They're getting into a situation where they really are going to have to make some decisions pretty quickly. Africa is basically burned for them, and they've got to go. Where do they go? Well, the captain, who is Russian, and his Ukrainian crew have found out from the ship's owner that their passports are in Korea. Well, they're going to head toward Korea, which is where perhaps this boat maybe calls home, but we're not real sure just yet. So they head east. And if you head east far enough in the Indian Ocean, eventually you find Indonesia. The Straits of Malacca are some of the most dangerous shipping channels in the world. They've got, it's a huge volume of ships of all sizes coming and going. There is this, it's like blitz attack piracy. So ships in the shipping channel going back and forth, and they're being attacked in transit as they're passing other ships. So this rogue vessel is heading in that direction. Now, before they get there, let's talk about why this is so bad. We've mentioned about the demand for fish. Now, we're talking in this case, this particular vessel is transporting illegally gotten what we would call sea bass. Think about this. Every time you see a commercial for fast food fish, or you look in your freezer and there's fish sticks or fish fillets, odds are, if it's not labeled otherwise, it's probably Alaskan caught pollock. It's a good fish. It's tasty. It's easy to prepare. It's easy to catch. The U.S. accounts for 32.4 million tons of legally caught Alaskan pollock every year. 32.4 million tons of one fish. That's a tremendous amount of fish. Think about the value to a business or an enterprise or an economy when you talk about that kind of money. So this ship, Ross Sea, Namibia, Mozambique, Madagascar, now Indonesia. The globe just keeps turning. Here they go. They get to Indonesia, and Indonesia has been fierce in how they deal with piracy and illegal fishing. They know that shipping and fishing and maritime resources are not just part of their identity. It's part of their heritage, their history, and their future, and they are serious about it. So, they've been tipped off by African countries like Tanzania and Namibia, Interpol, Sea Shepherd, and other groups, and they know that they've got a bad actor on their way. So they send in a ship, an interception boat, really, and a helicopter, get some pictures over the top. They know exactly what they're looking for because high-tech satellite images have shown what this ship looks like, and they've tracked its history now over and over based on port of call histories for several months. They know this is the STS-50. But the STS-50 has done nothing wrong in Indonesia just yet, except their gill nets are stored on top of the deck of the boat. And in Indonesia, a ship in transit cannot store fishing equipment like gill nets on the deck. They have to be stored underneath. So they board the vessel under those auspices, and the ship is taken to port. Now, what you don't know is that this ship, in its lifetime, but certainly in the previous 12 months, has been taken to port more than a dozen times. And every single time, it has either been let to depart, or it has just left. They have turned the lights off, and they have left at night on a high tide, never to be seen again under that name and that flag. They are quite good at disappearing. Well, not this time. They get caught. A lot of the crew, incidentally, is Indonesian, which is not uncommon in the shipping industry. They are let go, but the Russian and Ukrainian crew are held on to. They claim they don't know what's going on. In fact, this captain has only been on this boat for several weeks. He's new to this old ship. And maybe he didn't know what was going on. But in the background, investigators in Korea have swarmed the offices of the Poseidon Company, which it's an empty shell of an apartment. It's other umbrella corporation, no known address, no known landlord, off we go. So now we have a Russian arrested at the port in Indonesia. What else could possibly happen other than maybe a James Bond appearance or Superman, but more's to come.
Well, we're going to find out what happened here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're going to quickly continue the story. He's Wes Lawson. I'm Bill Barty. We're the Outdoor Guys from Jesse Brown's. And we are talking about something that was featured in the Smithsonian Magazine for this upcoming month's article. The title of the article, The Hunt for the Modern Day Pirates Who Steal Millions of Tons of Fish from the Seas. These criminal actors threaten fragile species, forcing an international coalition to track them down. That international coalition includes conservation groups, law enforcement, and on and on and on. And that ship that you just mentioned was 33 years old, 175 feet long, the STS-50 that we're talking about. Those nets that you talked about were gill nets. They could cover up to 18 miles of water, and when they went into the water in a single trip, could be $6 million worth of fish caught in those gill nets. So that was the giveaway. And of course, in Indonesia, where they stopped and kept them, the captain and his crew, the captain was jailed and fined and left to his own devices. No interpreter. The Russian embassy quit all contact with the owners of the ship and the prosecutors in Indonesia. And Wes, how did we end up?
You know, this article by Tristram Courten is fantastic, and I really encourage all the listeners to go pick up a copy of this or find it online digitally. It is just so interesting, and we can't get into all the details. It is just phenomenal. It's intrigue in the high seas, it's food, it's income, it's national resources, and it's multinational in scope. And so I'll leave it there for you, but I'll encourage everybody to just spend just a little bit of time of looking into where your food comes from, especially your fish. We are not anti-fishing one bit, but we are pro conservation and we are pro following the rules when it comes really to everything, but especially to our natural resources. The people in this story, they are people, they do have families, but they are not multi-generational fishermen who are going out with long line, with their rods and their reels and their nets. These are guys who are going out there committing crimes that are illegal in most nations across the globe. It's a fascinating read. Check it out on the Smithsonian Magazine. As Bill said, it's the hunt for the modern-day pirates who steal millions of tons of fish from the seas.
Piracy, poaching, intrigue, crime, sea chases, all of that's in there. But we encourage all of our Carolina Outdoor listeners to play by the rules. Thank you, Wes Lawson. I'm Bill Barty. We're going to take a quick break and be back on the other side after this.